This is an interview with Clifford W. Krieger for the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. The interview, held on February 18, 1981, was conducted by Mark F. Smith.
Okay. First question, lead off. Who were the leaders of the Progressive Party in your area?
There was a farmer by the name of John Chevy. Last name is spelled S-C-H-E-W-E. He was a somewhat self-educated, well-read individual, and who made a fine presentation at town hall meetings, which were rather the custom in those days. Not extremely liberal, but in case where private enterprise did not take care of the needs of the community or the people, then of course public ownership was all right. And there was a lady by the name of Mrs. Angie Hildebrand from Tomahawk, who was very active in community affairs and very active in St. Mary's Catholic Parish at Tomahawk, and whose husband also was a railroad man, and she was secretary of the Progressive Party in Lincoln County in those years. The precinct level was very well organized in most counties in those state in the state at that time, particularly in the Progressive Party, and also this was true in the Republican Party in my area of the state, but not as true relative to the Democratic Party, because Democrats were far and few in between. There were some interested on the national level. I mentioned Mr. Chevy and Mrs. Hildebrand because of their energies that they really spent in this activity. And I guess I told you before that the Progressive Movement was not a secret lodge, but there was more cordiality between, and they had a common goal and their common interests, that it threw them together more on a personal relationship. I think I alluded to that at the last time. And I tell you this because of this Mrs. Hildebrand and this Mr. Chevy. They were dedicated people to the cause, and they probably were the most outstanding ones. How far is your tape going now? I'm going to go into another one.
Yeah, plenty.
But at the same time, we had a very active young progressive element. Now, this was the beginning of my activity in the Progressive Party. Although there was this structure of the senior political group, they were not very good at raising finances. And remember, we're talking back in the 30s, which was the Depression years, and finances were a great difficulty, particularly for the Progressive Party, which was basically made up of farmers, laborers, railroad employees, small business people, and elements of that, and teachers, and things of that. And of course, there was not much money there to donate, particularly in those times, for a political party. But the young progressives, and we were numbered about 40 to 45 people, and which was organized primarily by myself. And this Walter Schwucht was a friend of mine who was, his folks were on the farm. And much of this was started when we were in our high school. And we did have picnics, and we had, in those days, for instance, carnival rides. Well, there was a big, I have to just put this in as an insert, because it doesn't relate to politics, but it does also connect my show business activity. And there was a large southern carnival called United Federated Shows. They were from down at Atlanta, and it was a big carnival. And of course they were up here, and they were practically broke. And they, in this park, which was not very big in our small community, we were able to get some of the four or five of the newer type rides that had never been shown in Merrill before or never been put on for the young people to ride. And we set them up, and they gave us a good commission. And it was a three-day affair, a weekend affair with dances in the evening. And these young people, which was quite a deal for them to do at their age, because none of us were responsible, but we did manage to make $1,200 for our county republic of the Progressive Party at that time. And it was the progressives throughout the state in their publications made a great issue of it, because Lincoln County, that was quite a sum of money, and much of that money went to the state for their statewide party campaign. And but the community had a good time. The younger people of the community were just fascinated by these rides, because they had never seen them at the local fair, because our carnival types were smaller. But I put that in, they were the money raisers. They were the ones, like in politics today, they did the legwork during the campaign. The distribution of tabloids, we didn't have pamphlets much in those days, mostly tabloids. There was no television. There was radio at Wausau, but none in our local community. So most of the advertising was done in the newspaper and from house to house. And I guess we kind of wandered off, but I think that was an integral part to show you the structure of a party organization in a smaller rural county. But that was the exception and not the rule. It was the exception from the standpoint that there was this combination of young and old who were both doing their share. And of course, in 1936 election, the courthouse, which had been Republican for many years in Lincoln County, everything went progressive, with the exception of a county clerk who was an amputee. And our clerk candidate did not make that, and also the register deeds, who was another amputee. Otherwise, the courthouse was cleaned up from top to bottom with a progressive administration.
Okay, what year was that, the carnival that you were discussing?
That might have been... or it could have been, 1937 or 38, but it might have been in 38 campaign that we raised that money. But in 1936, the young progressives were, I don't believe, quite organized by themselves, but we were already a nucleus, and we did put on dances. Card parties. We used to go around to the town halls on certain Saturday nights and promote a card party where we could probably pick up $15-$20 as a result of our net proceeds for the evening. But you see, the times were different then, and people did go that was their entertainment, and we provide. But as we did this, all this activity was associated with the Progressive Party. We were really at the point that we're bringing entertainment to the hinterlands in all corners of the county, and I think that's why we were successful.
Okay. To what degree was the party independent of the state? The party in Lincoln County independent of the state party, or what degree were you?
Well, I say that it wasn't. I think in that day, because of the cause and because of the reason for leaving the Republicans, and I don't want to get into that, because of Phil LaFollette and Bob LaFollette hesitantly joined Phil in starting the progressive movement and having our own party, that was the... it was a more or less a call. And I think the relationship with at Lincoln County, as much as I can remember, was very, very close to the state party. It was a common challenge, and it was a call. It was a new party. And as I mentioned before, much of that $1,200 that we made in those 3 days as profit went to the state party, because they were in dire need. They didn't have big contributors, and because of the times they didn't have, and in all many of these communities, and like I said, this was the exception before, to have a county like Lincoln. Now, if I may just go back, you mentioned what year this was when we had this this carnival in there and had that weekend celebration with speakers and all, but most of it was entertainment. I think it was the 1936 campaign that the party, but with the assistance of these young people who were not organized at that time, but they were active, that we raffled off a Pontiac car, which I guess cost the group up there. By the time the dealer lopped off his commission for selling the car, I think they bought that brand new automobile for $700, and they raffled that off in the county, and I believe that's how they made their money in that 36 campaign. And they made, I think, about $800 profit, and they sold those tickets for, if I remember correctly, 25 cents a piece. And I'm just interjecting that to kind of, I think, we're getting straight now that 1936 was the year of the Pontiac, how we raised our money, and in 1938 was the carnival. Did I answer your question now?
Yes. In 1936 was the year your father was elected sheriff.
Sheriff. He went in with that progressive landslide, yes.
Okay. At that year, did you have help from statewide people, like the young organizers that went around the state, or any large names? Were either the LaFollettes campaigning in Lincoln County at that time?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There was a very close relationship. Bob and Phil both traveled through the state. You see, that was the only way that you had to reach the public. I mentioned before, there were in many of our areas, there were no radio stations. We had one at Wausau. Those of us who had a radio at that time, you see, could get that, but not outside of that. It was the local newspaper, or otherwise you printed. That's why I mentioned before, the tabloid was more of an election document, a campaign document at that time, and usually they didn't have the money to spend the postage, which was very, very nominal at that point. But they even saved that. You might say they saved pennies. And that's where they used the young people to really make the distribution in the county. They sometimes mailed to the rural areas, but the cities were still done with legwork. And of course, in some of our campaigns, we do that today yet. But the media was different at that point, the contact. And in those days, people would even take literature with them, or like these tabloids, and take them to church with them on Sunday mornings. Really not pass them out in church, but they would, some of their kids or something would see to it that they were placed in all the automobiles that were at church, and never on the church steps, but probably out on the main sidewalk would be passing out. I remember that, because the reason I bring that out, I remember that our people told us never to go under the church property yourself on a Sunday morning. At those days, that could sometimes tip the apple cart. You would probably lose more than you would gain. Today, that doesn't make any difference. But at that time, it did. So,
it was 1936 your father's first political campaign?
Well, now I gotta think back. I think he ran in 1934. He ran 1 year before he was elected, and so that must have been in 34. He ran as a Republican, but there were several in the primary, and he did not, but he was close, and he did not get the nomination. But then by 36 is when they organized this progressive setup. And he won the nomination. At that time he had several candidates within the primary. And he won that and went on to be elected in the fall election.
Okay.
He served then another term in 1938. And of course, in those days, the statutes or the constitutional provision, you couldn't succeed yourself more than one term after that.
Okay. In 1940, then, you ran for county treasurer.
Yeah.
And on a progressive ticket.
Yeah.
And that's your, Loomis was the first time Loomis ran for
yes.
governor. And Robert LaFollette was also running
yeah.
that year. Were they involved?
Oh, yes. Very active.
They
were very active. In fact, that's what I think was a contributing factor to Spike Loomis's early death. Right after the campaign, it was rugged in those days to get around and to have. But they had all these rallies, and they had to produce all the state speakers that they could, and that was very important in those days. Today you can call the governor up to an area somewhere, and because of the communications and the exposure, he probably wouldn't draw the crowd unless you really organized to get the crowd out. But in those days, when the state speaker came, you got people out. You just let them know where it was and what time, and you got them out. Besides the LaFollettes and the... And like Spike Loomis in the 40 campaign, there was also Saul Levitin. I think we touched on him last time, who was the state treasurer as a progressive. A very, very colorful individual, very humorous, but who could make a real no-nonsense talk. And he really sold himself. He was... he was Jewish. He was the type of person that could tell stories on himself and ready to warm up the crowd. But when he had them warmed up, then he really went into his pitch, and much on finances, really, because at that time the state treasury, the state treasurer, really had some financial responsibility. And there was Ted Damon, who I believe came from Milwaukee, who was the Secretary of State. He wasn't as colorful as Saul Levitin, but he made a fine impression, and these people were all speakers. And then, of course, there was Ralph Immel, who became Phil LaFollette's Adjutant General at that time. He was a real speaker. And during Phil LaFollette's administration, because of the drought and the depression years and the Ralph Emmel was an important man, and he, because of not because he went out deliberately, but because of the forest fires and the problems and the drought conditions in the state, Phil LaFollette relied on him to go out and take care of the problems, and he did work with the community. In those days, it was the leaders, or the secretaries, or the people who had been replaced the responsibility when there was trouble throughout the state with a constituency or in any area. They went out and faced those people and helped solve the problem if they could. Today you have the henchmen in the departments, a completely different operation. And now how did we get over here in that area? But the party did, it was weakly structured on the state level because financially, but there was a lot of spirit, a lot of dedication.
At one of these meetings, would it be typical to have more than one of these statewide speakers there?
Oh yes, there would be a combination. Usually, you got to remember, we had progressive congressmen too up in our area, Barney Gehrman, who was congressman for many years, and I can't even remember the name of the old railroad man down here in La Crosse. I'm sure somebody else can provide that. Very active, strong, progressive congressman. They were sent out into other areas of the state. There was no lack of speakers or of activity.
In 1938, in the primary, there was a primary for the U.S. Senate between Herman Ahern and Thomas Amley. Do you remember what that impact was in Lincoln County on that?
No, I do not. I remember the campaign very vaguely now that you mentioned the name, Herman Ahern and Tom Amley. But Herman Ahern, I think, this is not in any way factual. I think that Herman Ahern up in our area was the stronger of the two. I think that if I remember this, now Amley, our area up there looked at him as a little bit too liberal. This is a good comparison to point out that, you know, our Republican friends at that time were very, very adamant in pointing out that we were liberals, that we wanted the government to take care of anything, but that was not the truth. That progressive movement was entirely different. They wanted to remain independent from the government, the central government, as much as possible. But I remember in the campaign there was some element that our people in general in that area regarded Tom Amley as the liberal, and some people thought he was even a communist. So you have that situation, see. And I think that points out, now maybe I'm answering your question as I remember back into this situation. It would be interesting to me, too, to see what really happened to the vote up in Lincoln County on that. I do not know. But I have a feeling, I know that I just recollect, and I have a feeling that the people in our county were supportive more of Herman Ahern.
You mentioned that people thought Tom Amley was a communist. Was there much communist activity in Lincoln County? Was there any avowed communists that you knew of?
And now this was 1938?
38, in the late 30s.
Yes. We did have communism. Now let me say, let me restate that again. Well, we had an individual or two, and I can't even recall the name, who we regarded as communists, but you see, some people have the tendency, at least back in those days, anything to be different enjoyed calling themselves the communists just to get attention. And I remember we had one fellow out there somewhere in the town of Corning in those years, and because he would admit he was a communist, but I don't think the man was a communist at all, but he'd done that to gain attention and to shock the hell out of people, you know. Which, but I, my father was sheriff at that time, and we did have a group of immigrants in our county who came from Latvia, Lithuanians, some Russians who came here about in the 30s, and they settled up there, and they had a settlement. And I remember that Father had to keep an eye on those people for the FBI, and they did come around periodically. There were some things that they want, certain people that they wanted to check them on. There was really nothing that ever developed on, but some of those people were a wild, they had a wild idea. But they all, the bulk of those families turned out to be good citizens, and there are many descendants of those original immigrants living in our county today that have become, there's no problem. But I guess at that time we were concerned, like the nation, and fear and hysteria, and it was very easy to label anybody that you didn't agree with politically and you got a little bit hot under the counter was to call them a communist. And I think some of that was generated in that county, and there were some that were problems. They ended up in jail for misdemeanors, stealing, which was common amongst all people at that time in the county because of the times. But never, and I guess they had some wild rallies up there once in a while, that they denounced the American government, and but it was never anything that materialized to any point that we had to send somebody back to Russia.
Okay, I'm going to have to change the tape right now. Okay, let's start again. In 1940, in the gubernatorial primary, there was a race for governor. Among the candidates were Paul Alfonsi and Orland Loomis. Do you recall who you supported at that time?
Well, the Young Progressives supported Paul Alfonsi in the primary. He was from our area. We were familiar with him. Well, there was a speaker, too. Paul has always been an affluent speaker and a convincing type of person, especially in his younger days. He was exceptional and was a school teacher. His age appealed more to our group, although he was older than us. And we did a lot of legwork for Paul in Lincoln County. Because it was a five-way race, I think Paul did, he might have carried our county, I can't recall. But what he certainly was in there near the top. If he was, he came in first or second. But then, of course, in the general election, we rallied around Spike Loomis.
Last time we discussed the impact of Loomis's death in 1942 before he became governor and how that was a disaster for the Progressive Party. Several historians have concluded that Loomis had committed himself to running as a Republican in 1944. Was that generally known at the time, or?
I think it was probably the beginning. You see, Bob La Follette was never, I'm talking about young Bob at that time, was never really sold on the idea of Phil's to form an individual party. As I understand it, the background, that Bob wanted to stay within the Republican Party. I personally am that type of individual. To this day, I always felt that basically we were Republican, but we And that's what I've always said. I think the true progressives throughout the state like the Spike Loomises. And I mentioned Saul Levitin before, and Ted Damon, Herman Ekron. I even think Ralph Emmel was basically that type, but some people went along with Phil for the sake of organizing the party into an individual party. Basically, the true progressive at that time was still a republic. We have had in various stages in the last number of decades here within the Republican Party, it has been a constant struggle for the moderates. And I know this, and I just don't only feel it, the moderates of the Republican Party have had great difficulty to getting into power and let alone have enough to say of their viewpoints when the conservatives are, Jack. I have no difficulties with conservatives. I respect many of them, but they have a tendency to decide who the hell is a good Republican or who the hell is a good Republican. And that's been my argument within the Republican Party. Mainly, I have no difficulty living within the Republican structure, party structure, only that we do differ on some issues. Now, what was that question again? Let me get back into that.
It was basically, was it well known that Loomis had tended to run as a Republican in 1944?
I don't think it was that well known, but it had been approached. Now, I think that the reason that I was felt good that Spike Loomis had been elected, I think one of the things that hurt the Progressive Party, that because really in effect the people had the image of it being the La Follette Party, and I accepted Spike Loomis's election with great anticipation of the Progressive Party really becoming the Republican Party in this state. Now, I'm sure that Spike Loomis, but I will say that it was the beginning of Spike Loomis's election was the beginning of not necessarily new blood, but different blood into the party.
Okay, let's go back to sort of the organizational structure. During the campaigns themselves, did the progressive candidates run as a ticket, or were they running as individuals who were all progressives? Was it a unified?
Oh yes, it was all. I think there was more. It was strictly a party. There was more more unity. Campaign posters. Many of them were sent to the county with a state ticket on the upper half with pictures. They left a place at the bottom where the counties could take them to their local printers and put on their local candidates or just print their names. And there was always a circle, a very strong emphasis to vote the straight ticket. And that's why, like in 1936, the party up there, the state party made a very, very strong effort to get a lot of people to run for county offices. And there was a lot of competition for the county offices within the primary. Father, I think, had two or three running for sheriff. Most of those, they told those people it was important that we had to make a real impression in the primary. That we had to take the activity away from the Republicans immediately in the primary, and that everybody would not get elected, or but there would be some dropouts, but they owed that. And you see, that's why I say it's that shows you the loyalty, the combination, the spirit. Much different than nowadays. And I think that the Republicans really got a lesson from that, because the Republicans did that after a while then too. That isn't following elections.
Once you'd become a candidate, did you remain active in the Young Progressive Club, or did you become more active in the Progressive Party organization?
Now, my activity was, I was the liaison between the party and the county, as the leader of the Republican, as the leader of the Young Progressives. I was active. This is where I met, these are the years that I met Miles McMillan and John Lawton and Gaylord Nelson, Thomas Fairchild, who's now a federal judge in Milwaukee, and was formerly on he and his father were both on were chief justices. With the university crowd here at Madison, but Tiny Krieger was all alone up in little old Lincoln County, that actually became affiliated with them. And this was unusual, because I was not going to the university. I had desires to go to the university, but because, again, of the Depression years and the times, it just didn't work out. Like, it wasn't that available and readily available or at your front door. Everything was state teachers' colleges, and I didn't want to be a teacher. And but as a result of my coming to the national, to the state conventions of Young Republicans, which we also had, in fact, I think it was 1940 when we had the state convention of the Young Progressives in Merrill. At which John Lawton and those people could give you probably much more detail about this matter, but we did put on that convention for them in Maryland very successfully. I don't remember who the speakers were. Somebody has a program at home yet of our convention. I'll have to talk to her. She was a member of that time. To show you one other thing that you may not be thinking of, give you another instance of this closeness and determination, and the cause that we had was with these Young Republicans.
You mean Young Progressives?
The Young Progressives, as I told you, went out throughout the town halls. We created all kinds of projects for ourselves in trying to raise money for the party. And we did well. But as we got older and everybody got married in this group, these were kids from the county and the city of Merrill, they sort of remained as a nucleus, and to this day, many of the young people that were associates, some of them married within our group, some of them married outside of the group, but many of the people that they had of this group became attendants at their weddings, and this group to this very day. My wife still belongs to a card party that was originally organized by eight of these young women after they were married to keep the contact. And although there is no close organization, to this day, these people now, well, we've gone through that stage. When our children got married, most of these people that are still living in the Merrill and Lincoln County area are invited to the weddings and everything. They were the nucleus of my start as a state senate candidate, this Walter Schwab. My wife and his wife, he married a girlfriend, my wife was the maid of honor at that wedding. So I'm just, not that this, but I'm talking about the sociability that also was incorporated, and I think this was the important part of the success of the party in Lincoln County.
Okay.
Now, where were we before? Did we answer the question now?
I believe so. A couple of just quick questions. In 1941, you were elected alderman in Merrill.
Yes.
Did you remain an alderman then until your election to the Senate in 46?
Or? Yes.
Was your support...
No, did I run in 41 for alderman?
I believe that's what you told me last time.
Well, it must have been... because I was elected in 46. See, I think I ran for county treasurer in that 40 election.
You told me you ran in 1942 for the Assembly or the Senate and lost in...
42, I ran for on a progressive ticket,
right,
as a candidate for Senate. I must have ran in 19... I don't think I served a complete year on the council. That my intention there was only to get ready for the 46 campaign to make some kind of... so I would have something to put on my brochure. My interest was not in city government. Although I enjoyed that year. We got into a hell of a big fight on the purchase of a fire truck. But that's another thing. And... I did run for council. That's one of the reasons I ran for county treasurer back there, too. Ran against Butch Scheffner, who was a progressive county treasurer, with more or less of the understanding that that was just to create, to get that name on the ballot. And although I did get into campaign and get around because I enjoyed campaign, we never put on a, we had a little card made and that was the extent. We never put on any, because that was the last thing I wanted to do, is to get elected to a county office, because the state senate was always way back there in the background.
Okay. You told me last time also that your father had attended the opening convention of the National Progressive America, Phil's National Movement.
Yeah.
Do you remember his impressions of that convention?
I remember when he came back, I asked him about it, and he said, well, he said there were people there, and he said, he didn't make any particular comment about it. I don't think that my father was interested in the progressive movement like I was. Politically, I think that he was a supporter of the Progressive Party, and I guess it's because of the times that he... I think if my father would have probably had steady employment and more security, would have never consented to run for sheriff. I think it was a necessity for him to do that. But naturally, when he was involved in it, you see, the state party sent out the word, we want you to send the biggest delegation that you can to wherever it was. And I remember seeing the pictures of it. Where was that yet?
It was here in Madison, University Stock Pavilion.
At the Stock Pavilion. I always thought it was at Fond du Lac at the fairgrounds, but... I see the pictures with the long drapery, and of course the Republicans and everybody criticized it. Republican press, stalwart press, criticized that all we had to do in that circle was put the swastika or add a few little, on the cross, just add something on each end, so they associated us with that. That's about the extent of what I remember that.
Okay. Let me ask one final quick question now. You could sum up your reasons for going back to the Republican Party instead of going into the Democratic Party after the dissolution of the Progressive Party.
Well,
I think this may be a little rambling, but I think there's more involved to this, and I often have to tell people this today. Many people say, well, Tiny, why don't you join the Democratic Party? And I guess I alluded somewhat to this earlier. The Republican Party, I feel basically secure within that party today. I am not always happy, and probably in too many instances, with what certain people in my party are doing or their support. Now, I was pleasantly surprised when Mr. Reagan the other day announced, for instance, on his tax break, that he has finally decided to support a larger return, giving them a bigger break on the lower scales of the income.
Oh.
And with less and larger. Now, according to the Kemp-Roth tax bill, which he supported, it was to be evenly. I understand Mr. Kemp was upset, but this morning on the television, he did say that he was not parting ways. He was supporting the president in that move, but he thought he was wrong. I think that, I guess what I'm trying to say, that is the type of legislation I am interested in doing, and I'm glad to see that a conservative like Mr. Reagan, or President Reagan, has at least adopted that philosophy. I know that many of his supporters do not. But that is what will build up the Republican Party, and basically there is room within the Republican Party for that, now the conservative call us a dissident group, but we don't think we are a dissident group. The Republican Party, its history was born. Its history and its heritage has been on diversity. And some of our more conservative element today doesn't want that. They feel that we should be off by ourselves. In fact, many of them think we should be Democrats. But I feel comfortable within the Republican Party. I think that, and I said this before, that the real progressive movement was a part of that Republican Party. They were the dissidents who were disgusted with the stalwarts, such as the senior Kohler in this state. Some of the names that don't come, and there was that conflict. They asked us to get out of the party, and they pushed us far along that finally Phil LaFollette took advantage of it. He started it, but it just didn't materialize, and I'm happy that it didn't materialize, because that could have caused more problems. Now, let me say this, and I have said this on the Senate floor with my good friend Carl Thompson. Carl Thompson and I keep a eye on each other because we were former progressives. He thinks I am doing a lousy job as a progressive, and I think Carl is wrong too. Now, I have always said that if Bob LaFollette was alive, and there is nothing on record that Bob LaFollette Sr. ever was anti-business. Tom Maney, who was a student on Bob LaFollette and who wrote his biography and who went into his records, I asked Pat Maney, who was an administrative assistant of mine, now a law professor at Tulane University, history professor, whether there was anything in his findings that that the Republican stalwarts were right, that he was a liberal or a socialistic mind. And he has assured me time and time and time again that the La Follettes were not anti-business. They started the Railroad Commission in this state because the railroads were robbing the farmers and to getting their products to the market, and they were holding up. That's how the toll road system got involved in our Constitution. They were for going into the lumber camps and providing decent living quarters for those people, because the fleas were carrying them away and the lice, and there was nothing to regulate them. So all the lumbering barons were mad because Bob La Follette interfered with their neat little setup, and all he asked is that those people have proper living conditions. Now, I suppose to those people and those businessmen in that day, that was something really where the government was getting involved where they shouldn't. And so I can understand their position. But the Democrats, while the Progressive Party was still in its heyday, were as bitter enemies of the progressives as the Republicans, and in some cases more so. This is the problem that we have explaining to this generation sometime, and to Carl Thompson, that they have less right, any of their people, to join the Democratic Party and carry their progressive principles with it than we have within the Republican movement. And the only thing that happened is that the Democrats took advantage of the progressive. We were hanging in limbo, and the Republican Party, the conservative element, didn't want us. I had a fight like hell to get in the Republican Party, but in plain words, my attitude was kiss my ass. I'm a Republican and I'm going to stay in that party. And that's the Democrats, like Carl Thompson and many of them in the state, took that element over there under false pretenses, because Democrats, the old patron saint over there knew that some of the element of the Progressive Party joined the Democratic Party and tried to say that they were the followers, that they're carrying on the progressive movement, he turned over in his grave.
By the patron saint, you mean Bob La Follette, yeah. Sr. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.